Et Naim, Nikki Yasam Hilo, Nikki Machuptamaidu. Hello, everyone. My name is Hilo, and I'm Machuptamaidu. We acknowledge and are mindful that Chico State stands on lands that were originally occupied by the first people of this area, the Machupta, and we recognize their distinctive spiritual relationship with this land and the waters that run through campus. We are humbled that our campus resides upon sacred lands that have sustained the Machupta people for centuries and continue to do so today.
Okay, Teresa, we are recording.
Hi, everyone. I hope you all are doing well. Welcome back to yet another episode of our podcast, First Generation, One of Many. We are here to present yet another episode of insightful information. Super excited to introduce our guests. But before we get started, again, we are First Generation, One of Many, and our mission is to create an archive of discussions with and about first generation student experiences in and out of the classroom. We hope to continue raising awareness and understanding, provide voice for students and alum, as well as present resources for faculty, staff, and students working for and collaborating with first generation students. And of course, I do not do this on my own. I would love to introduce my co-host, Josh. Hey, Josh, how are you today?
Great. Hey, Teresa. It is nice to see you again. I have to share with the listeners, I went down to campus in my new role, so I'm wandering around different classrooms, checking out computers, making sure they work right, and playing with the new high-flex cameras and keyboards and monitors and everything. And so I happened to be able to run into you. It was so nice to see you in person. But of course, you had the mask on, and even seeing you at these recordings throughout the year, you walked by, and at first, I didn't even put it together that it was you for like a split second. And I went, oh, right. Duh.
I know, it didn't register for a bit.
But it was great though, yeah, to see you in person and be able to talk and hang out a little bit. Yeah, so it's a wonderful day. It's only 105, I think, on our day of recording here. And I've been invaded by 5 15-year-old teenage boys out there swimming around, making a bunch of noise and having fun. So.
Oh, I'm jealous.
Yes, it is.
Give anything to be swimming right now.
Yes, I think they're just doing it to rub it in. So.
Right.
Well, as tradition, we have a few quotes to share. Today, our quotes are a little bit more than normal. We have one or two. We have four today because I just couldn't decide, and they all have great messages and meaning, and our guests all said, yeah, those are great. Let's use those anyway. So let me roll those out, and you'll catch on to the theme for our episode today, and then we'll introduce our guests. So the first one is from Barbara Giddings. Equality means more than passing laws. The struggle is really won in the hearts and minds of the community where it really counts. And next, we have Audre Lorde to follow up on that. My silences had not protected me. Your silence will not protect you. And the next one is from Senator Tammy Baldwin. And this is a little bit longer. And she says, all of us who are openly gay are living and writing the history of our government. We are no more and no less heroic than the suffragists and abolitionists of the 19th century, the labor organizers, freedom riders, Stonewall demonstrators, and environmentalists of the 20th century. We are ordinary people living our lives and trying, as civil rights activist Dorothy Cotton said, to fix what ain't right in our society. And then finally, if you aren't aware or you are aware, 11 days from this recording. So when we post this episode, it'll probably be about maybe 7 or 8 days. And then June 28th will be coming up. It will be National Pride Day. And if you weren't familiar with that, June is National Pride Month. And the quote for that is from Brenda Howard. The next time someone asks you why LGBT pride marches exist or why Gay Pride Month is in June, tell them a bisexual woman named Brenda Howard thought it should be. All right. So I'm sure you caught on by now. Today, our episode, we're going to be talking with three guests about the intersection of being first generation and a member of the LGBT community, or GSM, a gender sexual minority community. All right. So first up, and this guest was, I'm so excited for all of you. Alondra Adame was one of our first guests who said, yes, I want to be on the podcast. And that was 1 year ago. And we finally have been able to get around to working out a schedule and for her to be on an episode that she is passionate about and really wanted to be part of the conversation with. So Alondra is a poet, essayist, and alumni of Chico State's Master's in English program. While they are proud of all their publications, The Audacity to Live, originally published in the Nacional, an essay dear to their heart, which details their struggles with navigating higher education as a queer person of color and child of immigrants. They hope to encourage more queer Latinx students to pursue higher education and learn how to use their creative voices in the future as an instructor of creative writing. So welcome, finally, 1 year in the making, Alondra.
Thank you.
It is great to see you again. And summer's treating you well?
Yes, I'm like really excited to be a lecturer for Chico State in the fall. So hi for that.
Congratulations.
Another thing I forgot to mention in the bio is I go by they, she pronouns. Oh. And so I'm a non-binary woman. I'm also pansexual. And so those are two things I think I didn't mention in my bio that are probably important for this particular episode.
Hey, that's great. I think, yeah, because the they pronoun was all you put in there. So definitely good to share so people know. All right. Now, next guest.
Yeah, so next, it's my pleasure to introduce our next guest, Danny Sebring Arenial. Danny is a Shasta College graduate and is soon to be Chico State graduate. They've moved 31 times and counting from Mount Shasta to Orange County to the Bay Area and all the way back to NorCal. They've even took a souvenir from middle school with them to college. Their best friend now turned fiance. Oh, how cute. I just put two and two together. It's amazing. I love that.
Nice.
Thank you.
During their tour around California, they found a deep love and appreciation for new faces and cultures. They acquired their certificate to teach English abroad and are excited to continue their adventures in places like South Korea and Spain. Awesome. Welcome to the podcast, Danny. How are you?
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Good that we were able to like work something out. I'm really happy mm-hmm. to be a part of this episode, something that means a lot to me.
Awesome. We're super excited to hear from you and to have you here.
Yeah. Thank you.
Can I share how we met, Danny?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because it's the exact opposite of Alondra, in that Danny and I met just maybe about a month and a half ago, maybe 2 months ago. And our third guest, Molly Heck. Molly teaches at California State University Chico in the Multicultural Gender Studies Department, as well as the School of Social Work. She teaches a variety of women's studies, multicultural gender studies courses, as well as undergraduate and graduate level courses in social work. She is on the advisory board of the campus-based activist organization, the Associated Students Gender and Sexuality Equity Coalition. She does consulting work that includes training and capacity building related to trauma-informed practices, approaches, serving LGBTQ plus populations, staff supervision strategies, voluntary participation in services, and creating healthy organizational culture. So in her free time, Molly is a full-time mom entering her second year in her doctoral program at UC Davis. Welcome, Molly.
Thank you. All my free time. There's some good free time in the summer. Yes. Happy to be here with you all. This is so great. What an amazing group of people.
Yes. So again, thank you all for being here. This is amazing. And Teresa, take us away.
Awesome. Yes. So before we jump in into the bulk of our episode, can you all start us off by letting us know what you're currently doing right now, or share your beginnings as to how you got into where you're at right now within, whether it was career-wise or higher education, just a little bit about your adventure and how you got to where you're at right now. Hmm. Whoever's ready can start off.
I can jump in. Mm-hmm. How did I get here? Well, gosh, my family got me here for sure. I have a really close connected family. Most of them live just down the street from me in Chico. So really supportive parents who the conversation was not if I was going to college, but where. And I should say in that my parents also went to college. So I am not first gen. Though I teach a lot of first gen students and I'm getting to know more and more certainly about the experience. So really supportive parents. My family got me here. I'm a Chico State alum. And when I took my first women's studies class, I was a couple of different majors. I was an art major and then a Spanish major. And then I took my first women's studies class and I was like, that's it. That's it. Like, I want to talk about changing the world every day. And so that led me to a few different places doing work in the community, at some nonprofit organizations, and then back to Chico State to teach, because I love being around students because I want to be a student like forever. And I certainly say in, the classrooms that I get to be a part of that it's reciprocal. Like I learn so much from students. I hope they learn from me, and from authors and content, right, that I get to sort of facilitate. But yeah, it was women's studies. My mentor, Elizabeth Renfro, who's retired, but she taught at Chico State for a long time. She's a lecturer. And I remember one day she wrote on the board, we were in like an upper division class, and she wrote, and I'm not outing her, but she wrote, because she's definitely out, she wrote feminist, Christian, bisexual, as like that she was telling us who she was, right? And I was like, I only knew the feminist part. And so I just feel like her teaching has led me also down this really cool like teaching and learning journey.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. And I'm excited to hear a little bit more about yourself too as we go on with the episode. All right. So Danny, Alondra, whoever's ready.
Ready if you want, Danny.
Yeah, that's fine.
So I guess in terms of beginnings, I grew up in Sutter, which is like a very, very small town in Northern California, very predominantly white. My parents are Mexican immigrants. And so that was essentially like my first generation experience, was learning everything about the United States at the same time as learning about like obviously their culture. And the way I guess I got into higher education is essentially I almost like ran away from home in a way. My parents didn't want me to go to college. They wanted me to stay home and take care of my brothers. And I didn't want to do that. So I essentially took a small scholarship that I got and I put a deposit on an apartment. And then I told them about a week before that I was leaving. And so I left. And then it was the rest of everything. I came in as a psychology major at Chico State, decided I didn't want to do that because I loved English more. And so I immediately switched. I actually got kicked out of the class I'm currently about to start teaching because I didn't do one of the fiction readings. And so it's like a really funny thing to like come back and teach the same class. But I love higher education. Grad school itself too was kind of like a last minute thing where one of my professors reached out to me and was like, I think your creative writing is like graduate level, like, would you consider it? And at the time I actually wanted to go into high school teaching, but I loved being a TA when I was in grad school and I really loved teaching creative writing specifically. And so I'm really happy to like continue on while being a teacher in higher education. That makes me really happy. So I guess that's where I'm at.
That's awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah, and you were able to present last fall or spring, right? Or right before COVID, you were presented on The Audacity to Live. You did a verbal presentation.
Yeah, that's actually the essay where I do talk about how I left home. And actually, it's the same essay, too, where I mentioned my grammar professor outed me to my dad on accident at an award ceremony where I was winning. I think I won a diversity award from the English department. And so she hadn't known, like she didn't know that they didn't know. And so I didn't like hold a grudge against her, but I'm always just like, man, like things would have been really different if that had happened, you know? But yeah, I presented The Audacity to Live for, I think, the Office of Diversity and Inclusion. And that was really fun. A lot of people cried, but I think that's what I want. Like, I want people to have an emotional reaction to creative writing and like creative work, and especially that type of story, you know?
Yeah.
I gotta read. It's published, right? So I can find it.
Okay. I'll drop it in the chat.
Yep. And we'll put we'll put that link in our show notes, of course, too.
Great.
All right, Danny, let's hear from you, Danny.
All right. It's just kind of hard to figure out where to start. I didn't really ever think that I was going to go to college. My mom actually discouraged going to college. She thought like it wasn't worth it, or it's just not necessary. And so I didn't really have a lot of drive for college or school in general. I actually, due to like home circumstances and just a lot of things, I actually dropped out of high school in freshman year, and I didn't really do anything for a little while until my sister kind of reached out to me and said, hey, do you want to come back to Mount Shasta to live with me? I was living in the Bay Area at the time and continue going to school at a charter school. And so I was having a really hard time with my home life at that point. My mom was never really there. My dad passed when I was 9. And so there just wasn't a lot going on for me there. So I went to high school at a charter school, and I discovered that I don't dislike school. I just really disliked the way that they were teaching it. And I disliked not feeling like my own individual self and person, and just felt like a number being pushed through. And so after being given individual attention, I realized like, hey, I actually really enjoy this. And it made me realize like all of the people that had doubted me at that point and told me that I wasn't going to be able to graduate, I wasn't going to be able to do anything with my life. Honestly, a big chunk of it is spite. That I wanted to go to college and prove to them, but more importantly, prove to myself that I would be able to do it. And it was a great opportunity too, because at the time my partner had still lived in the Bay Area where I went to middle school, and I'd moved down to Mount Shasta. And so we found a way to meet in the middle and move in together at the dorms of Shasta College. And they're in the other room right now. We've been together ever since. We're hoping to get married soon. And it was a great opportunity for me to be able to not only just move out of my mom's or my sister's and just kind of make a life for myself with my partner, but it was a great opportunity to really get my life and my career started with more motivation than I ever had. With people telling me what I could or couldn't do, I decided kind of what I wanted to do. And so that's kind of why I'm here now.
Great, thanks. It's wonderful to hear the three different stories, very different. And where you're at now is similar in some senses for all of you to be in higher ed, doing some work and giving back, contributing and helping improve our community. So thanks for all that too. And you may not even realize you're doing that sometimes, because it just feels like work some days. And then other days you realize, oh, I am doing things that aren't work necessarily, right? Outside of there. So I think I wanted to share, there was an important message that Alondra mentioned about her grammar professor. And I think that's important. So if you're listening and you identify as heterosexual or straight and not part of the LGBT+ community, that mistakes are made. And if it's not malicious, those happen, but you need to be aware of it. And so you can avoid those as much as possible. And even after doing this work for about 20 years, working with diversity and equity and inclusion, I was talking in a group of about 4 different people, and they asked to give an example about something. I said, well, I can't really ever understand what it means to be. And I looked at one of the people and I said, I can't know what it means to go through your experience. And I named the experience. And then, being a Black male coming from the inner city, I can't ever relate to that. I can only learn from you. And then the next person, I said, I can never know or relate or know what it is to be a trans woman. And as soon as I said it out loud, my whole body just stopped moving. And my friend looked at me and they said, oh, I didn't know we were going to be sharing those things today. And they were so gracious and helped me. And I said, I don't know what to say. And they said, don't say anything. We make mistakes. We're human beings. We're fallible. Be accountable, learn from this, and move forward and continue to do good work. And so it was just, you know, so you got to be aware that some of those things may happen in any group you're working with, but be aware of how you approach it, and be the more you can be prepared, educated, and ready going into it, that will help in different situations for sure. So I wanted to share that it is part of experiences for everybody, no matter who you're talking with, how you're talking about different groups, not just LGBT group or GSM communities, right? So you got to be aware of those things. So thank you for sharing that, Alondra, because you know that was a very powerful moment. Like you said, you never know what your life could have been if that accident or mistake didn't happen in that setting for you. And you were very gracious, it sounds like, and caring, because I know that's who you are as a person. So, all right. So getting right into that, the next question. We've had a couple of episodes. We talk about the importance of language, right? And names and identities, labels, and how they carry this power quite often. But they're lacking, right? In that they're void of what the experience is that goes along with that name or label or title. And then it's also then lacking in being able to connect with the people who are having those experiences. And so, and who are living those experiences on, you know, every day. And like you've all shared, how you kind of got to where you're at, different things you've lived and gone through. Oh, 1 second, we'll take a pause. Teresa has to go. So.
Sorry, Summer Bridge.
So, yeah. Teresa's off to go and empower some first generation students through through the traditional yearly event of Summer Bridge that EOP offers on most campuses. And so, all right. And I will be there soon. Also, I'm going to be presenting on how to navigate Blackboard.
Yeah, I'll see you soon, Josh. Yeah. And it was a pleasure seeing you all, and I hope to meet you all soon on campus or virtually again. So, bye.
Bye. Okay, and so right back to our question of the names, label, identities, those kind of things, and how they're more important is what's behind those, the experiences that are lived by people. And we look at the evolution of LGBTQIA, and that's not even all of it, right? Sometimes you'll see more than one Q or more than one A, or so depending on what your group you're looking at, what literature reading, what your websites you're looking at and finding, and all those things are important. And often you'll see it listed with G first or T first or B first. And so if you're not familiar, quite often that really is a sign then of the group that is putting that out, that the first letter is the area that they identify maybe the most with or are doing more work for in general, tends to be kind of why that letter might be different if you see that in the beginning. And then about 5 or 6 years ago or so, gender sexual minority or GSM became more part of the discussion and people using that as what they want to identify with and identify as versus LGBTQIA because of how it became for some people just a little bit too much and maybe cumbersome or overwhelming in a way. And so GSM became new one. So those are also then showing, it shows the importance, right? And the energy to be inclusive and to be thinking about how powerful these names and labels can be. So to get to you three to help share, are there specific ways that you identify and why did you choose those words? And what do they mean to you and others in the community that you identify with? So if we can go maybe in reverse order, Danny, if you wanna share first.
Yeah, sure. So I know that especially when I was younger, identity, finding a specific label for how I felt was very important to me. And I've gone through a lot of different labels. And I think that the important thing to maybe realize about labels is that just because you, not to say like it's just a phase or anything like that, but being aware that you can feel comfortable with one label one day and then feel a completely different way in the future. And it's completely fine to be fluid in your identity and just because you might identify with something now and you used to identify with something else earlier, doesn't mean that that was ever invalid. It was just, that's how you were then. This is how you are now. And so the things I've identified with in the past, I've identified with asexual. I used to identify with being transgender. Now I more so just identify being non-binary or pansexual, things like that. I usually just identify as some variation of queer. I don't really think too much nowadays of what specific label to use for me, because that's just not, it's not something that I find importance in for myself and like who I am today. And I know that the labels and things like that, they mean a very different thing to everybody. And just because a label is like very important to one person and not at all important to another person within their own experiences, like both of those people can absolutely be right in that feeling. Like it's not black and white. That's why it's a whole spectrum of things, is we all just pick and choose what we feel comfortable with and hopefully allow others to do the same.
Yeah, thanks. I'm glad you threw the word spectrum out. I was waiting to hear that. And if not, yeah, you're going to bring it up because that'll be in the show notes. We will put a couple of links into some of the websites available to kind of go, because you have been using different terms, and we're not going to be able to really break down a lot of these terms on the episode today, but we will have links to that out there as well. And then one thing that will be important that we'll talk about briefly here, and we'll share some links to, is that the understanding of gender identity and sexual orientation are two very different things. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing, even having a discussion a couple of weeks ago with a couple of faculty, they were asking about students in their class reached out and said, you know, I want to let you know that I'm transgender. And so they were asking me questions about what I have done working with students and some of my work over the years. And when I said, oh, they're very different things, one of them even went, oh, they are. I did not realize that. So you know, so just to keep that in mind, that they're very different experiences and not connected with each other. Sorry, go ahead, Molly.
Well, I'm just going to push back on that a little bit, right? Because they are very connected to each other. Like all of our identities are,
yes,
right?
So sorry.
Overlapping, yes, intersecting, yeah, you know, all those kinds of words. So, yeah, you know, there's also a lot of difference, exactly.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry. I think that's important. Sorry. Yes. Intersectionality. What does that mean?
So I agree with that, Molly.
Yes. Okay. And then I guess if we went in reverse order, then Alondra was in the middle both times. So Alondra.
Yeah, and I agree with Molly for sure, because like for myself, non-binary wasn't a label I had taken on until this year. That was only after thinking a lot about myself and the way I viewed my like sense of like girlhood and womanhood, because Chicana feminism is so important to me and it's been so important to me. And so to deviate from that, I was like so terrified. But I think actually like being Chicanx felt better, because I had always felt like being a woman was a performance, for myself, at
yes,
least. It was something that I was told to be. And so I molded myself into that. And then I realized, well, that wasn't my choice. And so I wanted to take control over that choice. And after thinking about it, I did fit much better within they, she pronouns. I wrote a poem about this recently, and like I described it as like, you can call me she in the same way sometimes I call my parents' house my house. Like it's not, but maybe, yeah, one time it was. And that's fine, because I also feel very heavily about like basically healing your inner child. And like for myself, like that was a little girl, and as much as she struggled and as much as I didn't appreciate her at times, like she did keep me alive and kept me through it. And I appreciate that. And I have all these experiences that are so deeply interwoven with womanhood that I can't really let go of them. Like, and it's a choice. Like, I don't want to let go of them. They exist and they happen. And after performing like that particular poem, I had like a lesbian woman come up to me and be like, when it was my time and my generation, you needed to know exactly what you were. It was one or the other. And she's like, I think it's amazing that younger people have essentially accepted that it's a fluid spectrum and you can be like whatever you want to be, you can be both. And I was like, yeah, it definitely is. Like, it's much more dependent on how you feel, and that can change from day to day, and that's perfectly fine. But yeah, and then pansexual was something that I had figured out very young. I knew for a fact I wasn't straight very early on, but it wasn't until I was older and I had seen pansexual and found out like what it had meant that I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. That's exactly what I've always thought, really, is that I like people for who they are always. And it's never mattered to me in terms of like gender and identity. And I think part of that was growing up watching a lot of anime, because I had seen characters which could be both and were very androgynous and could be considered male and female at the same time, or even nothing at all. And I loved that. And I had always identified with it. And it wasn't until I was older that I was like, oh yes, now I know. Like, there was a reason my energy had matched so well with theirs. And so, yeah, they mean a lot to me in terms of like, they've affirmed the person I always knew I was, but they aren't the entirety of who I am.
I love that.
Thank you.
I found so much similarity to your experiences within myself. I also identify with she, they, but especially when I'm talking about who I was as a child, I always refer to her as, you know, that little girl, and talking about healing her through my experiences now. And also with being attracted to androgynous people was definitely the start of my awakening. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Or even trying to emulate them and then feeling like I couldn't.
It was like, do I want to be you? Do I want to be with you? And then you try to do both. And then am I transgender? Am I straight? Am I gay? Am I this? Am I that? And then you're just like, yeah, I'm whatever. They're cute. I'm cute. We're just... it's all good. We're all just getting along here. You just become okay with whatever rolls your way.
Mm-hmm. I think there was a lot of specific, like, especially pushback from my parents who need like these specific terms, but like even I couldn't even have those in Spanish. And mm-hmm. So it was like, well, I can explain this to you, but I know exactly what you're going to think and you're going to be confused. And so far I have been. And so it's just like, it's okay. Like, as long as you accept me, that's enough, I guess, for myself right now.
Yeah.
That's another just really powerful connection, right, to language in terms of the different languages that we all speak, and how our experiences translate or not to other languages. That's such a powerful one.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Alondra, you bring up so many, and Danny too, like so many, I'm like already jumping to like resources, like, you know, Judith Butler's work on performance, and of course, yeah. And her like notion of conocimiento, and like that we are always shifting and growing, and that we should be, you know, that is really natural human nature. Well, my belief is that we're growing and changing based on our experiences and the world around us. And I just also, you know, the lesbian woman who came up to you afterwards, like it's really real that it's just been the last, you know, decade or two that folks are even openly able, more open to be able to ask those questions about ourselves, right? Like, they're just the taboo and the stigma and the violence that would come with being out in any of those ways and asking any of those questions, it's a huge privilege, I guess, that we are now in a space where there are so many more safe places and safe people to be able to ask those questions about who we are and how we want to be and how we want to show up in the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, California has all these little bubbles of gayness and gay pride and queer pride. And, you know, that's not even the case across the same country, right? There's still a lot of, a lot of fear around folks. Yeah, and just what they believe. And so I guess I'm saying that to suggest, like, it's not all in the past. You know, there's mm-hmm. still a reality of the present. I mean, the number of anti-trans bills that are
passing
across the country right now and passing, I mean, it's like, there's like 240 anti-trans bills in various state legislations right now. It's like wild.
It's awful.
So, and some of it is about language, which, right, like, is about like, no, we're not gonna, you have to choose male or female.
And I see like a lot of that, like binary too, that comes up in even conversations with other people in the community of like, well, how are you non-binary if you already identified as like a woman and like have done all this? And I'm like, well, it can still change. And so creating false binary within a place that shouldn't even be concerned with that. Or at least I think so, just because I don't think queerness is boxing things in. I think it's always more possibilities. Mm-hmm. I think in that particular poem too, I mentioned like true love isn't knowing. It's not an all-knowing thing. It's learning, and it's learning about people over and over again and learning about yourself over and over again. Yes. I think that's okay.
Yeah. There's, I have this experience with my partner, actually. My partner is gender fluid. I'm non-binary. During our entire college experience, a term of endearment from our friends and everyone, they would always just collectively refer to us as, oh, it's the lesbians. Knowing that neither of us are even like a lesbian or even identify as like women in general, but it's like, oh no, those are the lesbians. I don't know if it's just like you would call a fine boat she or something like that, but and it's just the so stuck on like the term sometimes. I was just at a friend's wedding, and a friend came up to the both of us and said, so if you're gender fluid, does that mean that 50% of the time you're in a straight relationship? And it's like, no,
wow.
That's not how that works.
Wow.
And they're like, then is it like 50% a gay relationship? And I said, no, it's gay all the time because I say so. It just, it's always going to be gay. Doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter what our particular identities are going to be that day. Like, this is, I'm never going to be straight. You can't trick me into it. You can't loophole me into being heterosexual.
Yeah. I mean, right. Those like that they're asking and like trying to figure out is partially because, you know, the male female binary is so embedded, right? And one of the reasons folks don't want to let go of that is, you know, some of the same reasons that, you know, folks don't want to let go of their racist ideologies either, right? Is because there's power invested in that. And when we start with just the fact that women have been othered in history, right? That we have been subjugated, seen as less than, as the inferior sex, then there's this way that if we just have this binary, we can still maintain and perpetuate this supremacy, right? Mm-hmm. Of male dominance. And so rocking that boat is, you know, it's upending a lot of the power that a lot of people are holding on to. And so if they don't, you know, if folks out there don't know who we are and can't put us in a box, I mean, say, you know, in similar ways to how have we done this to Black people in history, right? That if we could identify one drop of you, then we can oppress you. And so that's really scary for people. And it just gets to that, like those questions are like, can you tell me again, like, how is this working for you?
So which one of you is the man in the relationship? Like,
yeah.
No.
And that throws the heteronormative that's also been right scripted and passed right. down for so long with the binary of gender identity. It is difficult. And yeah, it is.
I think there's
I was going to say there's no man in our relationship, and that's why it was incredibly difficult to kill a spider on the wall the other day. We both looked at each other and said, this is the worst part about being gay.
Who's the one that killed the spider? Who's the one that cowers in the corner?
Yeah. Sorry, continue.
Oh, sorry. I was just thinking about the fact, at least for myself, like part of like being non-binary and like adding that X on, especially to like a label such as like Chicken X, is a reclamation of like Indigenous heritage. Especially for myself, like my grandfather was Nahua. My mom didn't end up learning any of the language, didn't end up being able to take part of any of the culture, immigrated to the United States when she was like 19. And so it's like, I only got stories, and at the same time, like learning and like going back through that heritage and figuring out that like, it wasn't always a binary, like queer people had existed even before then. And it was really like colonization that came in and really embedded the binary that came with like Catholicism, at least in terms of Mexico. And so part of that is empowering in terms of like what we're talking about with language, of like having the ability to bring that back and like learn more about that history for myself has been a really important part.
Yes. Yeah, and we were talking about, you know, the all the bills that are out there and things happening with language. And now you mentioned the Catholicism, and just today, if you didn't see that the Supreme Court ruled that the Catholic-based adoption organization can deny access to
queer families
to adopt kids. Yes. So that was just came out this morning. That, yeah. So
what good news.
So as you see, today, it just keeps going and just keeps getting pushed and pushed. And people are so adamant to make sure that power they have is not taken away in certain areas, that they'll just keep pushing it up whatever legal pathways possible to get to the Supreme Court. And now we know the makeup of the Supreme Court is balanced towards conservative, right? So
yeah. It's a nightmare. It really is. Like,
yeah.
We're not asking for any more than anyone else, you know. We just want to be able to do the same things that anyone else can, you know.
Yes.
Like, it's just a nightmare, like knowing that it's gonna be a struggle to adopt a kid. Before I even knew that I was gay or anything, since I was like 4 years old, I always knew that I would adopt a kid. There was like no reason for it. I just always knew. And so it sucks that like 21 years later, like I'm still here, like still aware that that's not going to be an easy process, that it's still something that's going to be difficult for probably not even like the next few years. Like it's probably still gonna always be something that's difficult, because when you have this kind of intolerance, you know, it doesn't go away, it just changes forms. And you know, you in one aspect we have a success, and then it's like, okay, like we let them get away with that one, like where else can we hit them where it hurts? And so it's just always, I know that's not exactly optimistic, but I mean, it's just the reality of so many of our situations, that it's just going to be something difficult for the foreseeable future. And that's not optimistic, but it's good to remind ourselves of that, because it means that we can't stop trying to fight against that. As much as they're going to keep trying to fight against us, we can't stop fighting against them and against this intolerance and injustice and infringement of our rights as people. We got to just keep going forward, keep pushing forward, as much as they want to try and bring things back.
And it's like you said, it's morphing and changing, and to some of the areas where I've heard people say, you know, I support my gay friends and I march and I do these things with them, and they'll follow it up with a but. And I think, oh no, where is this going?
Always the but.
And then the but comes out, and it's like, but they shouldn't be allowed to be parents. And I'm like, so are you really supporting your friends and marching and doing this? You're not really. I mean, that doesn't make any sense, right? So you have people doing that as well, right? And so you get people who are, what? So you ask them, so are you 50% supporter and 50% not supporter? Like, I mean.
Are you a supporter 50% of the time?
Yes, right.
And
when it's, so it is evolving. And I think, like you mentioned, all of you, in the ways that we are seeing some positive changes in different areas. We're seeing them on smaller scales and we're seeing some on bigger scales. But it's like one of the quotes we talked about, you know, today, that if you're silent, it's not going to protect you. Mm-hmm. And connected to the other quote, we have to keep doing things to make the change and be willing to make those and sacrifice and what the consequence, the benefit, the outcome, whatever it may be. Knowing for you, if it's something that you believe is right, just, civil, humane, whatever word you want to use, that you continue to do those things, and that spreads around you, right, to other people. Yeah. So I being a parent of two younger kids who are just, one's almost a teenager and one is a teenager, seeing the way that they talk about it and are open to it, and the friends that they talk with and their friends are open about talking about it, and they know friends who are either gay or lesbian or transgender already in high school or bisexual, and they're like, oh, that's who that person is. And some of it may be because I'm at home and they get those messages from discussions I have and things we talk about and we watch different shows, but I hear some of their friends come around. I don't know what their families are like, but even their friends are like, oh yeah, that's so-and-so. And they accept people, for being people. And mm-hmm. to the part, I'll share a little funny story. Sage, when she was about four, she said she wanted to be a doctor. And I said, okay, what kind of doctor do you want to be? She said, well, I want to be a doctor that helps babies come into the world. And I said, okay. She said, so if I'm going to do that, I need a skeleton so I can learn what's going on inside the body. And I said, okay. And she said, not a little skeleton like this. I want like a real life skeleton. So we got her a full size skeleton. And I'll get to that. So the skeleton has been in and out of the house and around the house and bedrooms, and now it's in the garage just hanging out. And she named the skeleton Bob, and she was four. And some people came by one day and they were asking about it. And she said, oh, that's Bob. And they said, oh, so Bob, what's he going to do? And Sage looked at them. She was about this time, about six by that time. She had gotten to be a 2 years later. She said, oh, no, really. Bob is gender nonconforming. Bob is gender fluid. Bob is non-binary. And I just had to laugh like this. She learned these kind of discussion points from listening and talking with me about stuff, but it was so funny. And then someone said, yeah, but you know, if you look at Bob's pubic bone, it says female. And Sage went, oh, well, Bob's not. Because we haven't even discussed that, but you throw in the scientific side. And if you look at when people are gone and it's just a skeleton, they're always going to look at what's the structure of the skeleton and the bones. And that's a whole other side, right, mm-hmm. of the afterlife, I guess.
Yeah, she already knew that anatomy is not destiny, right?
So anyway, I wanted to share that. Yeah, so we are sadly again running into the wall of time. I keep telling time to just not worry about us and let us do our thing, but it doesn't seem to ever cooperate. So with that, we are going to need to roll into our recommendation section. All right, Molly, we know you have to leave. So first, I want to thank you for being here. It's great. And I think it's wonderful for you and I to at least connect now and then. We get to randomly here and there. So thank you for being here and joining us. And before you leave, what recommendation do you have for us, or recommendations?
Yeah, I'm going kind of old school with some of my favorite feminist theorists who, you know, have been talking about the intersectionality of gender and sexuality for a few decades. So I just recommend reading anything by Gloria Anzaldúa or Audre Lorde. And then there's a poem I'll let you talk about, Josh, that we both use. A really great spoken word piece. And then last, there's this really old school kind of HBO movie, I guess, that I was introduced to when I was an undergrad, that was about abortion, actually. But the second one that they put out was about lesbian relationships, and they do a little historical kind of look at what it was like to be out or not out in the 50s, and then the 70s, and then the 90s. So it's called If These Walls Could Talk Too. There's so many new things out right now. And so I know the other guests will have some really amazing things to share, but I guess it's my way of kind of honoring the work that folks have been doing for a long time that continue moving us forward. So super thankful to meet you both, Danny and Alondra, and hope to see you in the community. And thanks so much, Josh, for doing this.
Oh, great, thank you again. And we'll see you around soon.
Sounds good.
Bye.
Bye.
And the poem that Molly referenced is called Her, H-I-R. And it is a spoken word piece. And there'll be a link to that YouTube video as well. It's very powerful. All right, Alondra, what would you like to share today?
Yes. First, I'd like to share two poets that are kind of my favorites. Danesse Smith, who is a queer non-binary poet. Also, everything they write is very good. I would maybe suggest their poetry collection, Insert Boy or Don't Call Us Dead. And then Cameron Awkward Rich is a trans poet who has some amazing work. A particular poem might be In Transit, which is essentially thinking about their own identity, but also comparing it to like an airport and the way everything moves. And then I would also like to recommend The Queer Art of Failure by Jack Halberstam. And so that is kind of a theory, not very difficult to read, but essentially thinking about how our society forces us to be productive all of the time, a very capitalist point of view, whereas failure provides opportunities to reflect and learn from our mistakes and learn how to move forward and what possibilities are out there for us, like for ourselves. And so rethinking how we think of failure. That's something I would love for everyone to read.
That's great. That's great. I love some things I'll look for a couple and try to add them to the show notes as well. But this discussion around the pedagogy of failure inside of education and how we work with that as faculty and staff to support students in all the different failures that they may encompass, that some may be very small to a student and others may seem extremely catastrophic or extremely large. And even working through those next steps, how do you move forward? What do you learn from those things? How do you improve on yourself and the situations and be prepared moving forward? So thanks for sharing that. That's a good one. All right. And then I was going to share one I have is, it's a song. There'll be a link to the YouTube video by a band called Coyote Grace. It's a song called Ghost Boy. It's a wonderful story about a trans male moving through and aging and visiting old places and not seeing parts of who he was when he was younger there anymore, that the younger him does not exist. So the next one, of course, there's going to be a link to this also. It's an essay that's amazing called The Audacity to Live. So there'll be a link to that in our show notes. And that's, of course, by Alondra Adame. All right. Now, Danny, did you end up with something you want to share with us?
I know that there is a really amazing spoken word piece that I can't quite get a hold of at the moment. So if I do find it, I will make sure to send that in so that you could link it. For now, though, there is an amazing feminist artist that I am just absolutely, I just adore her. Her name is Ana Mendieta, and she is unfortunately long past allegedly murdered by her husband at the time, who is coincidentally in the MoMA, but she is not. And so her work is just amazing, and it just speaks volumes about the experience of, you know, how many facets there are of being female or just gender and things like that, and how it's not pretty all of the time. There's all this kind of I kind of drew a blank, sorry. But yeah, she's just really an amazing woman. And after her untimely death, which I personally believe to absolutely be a murder, seeing that she was never given the kind of recognition that her husband was given, I'd like to give her a personal shout out and have people check her out and give her some of the recognition that she deserves. So I can link some of her work too.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you again. You know, Teresa's gone. Thank you, Teresa. Bye. Molly has left. Thank you, Molly. Goodbye. And still Danny and Alondra are here. So thank you so much for being here again. It's great to finally get to this episode and the messages and stories that you shared. I'm very appreciative, and I know the listeners will be too, and Teresa as well. So with that, goodbye, and see you around soon. Listeners, thanks for listening.